recording on this wonderful, beautiful Tuesday for Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry. And we're so glad you're with us today. We got a great show, really interesting topic, and an announcement that we're going to make as well along today. If you would like to email us, because we get emails all the time regarding our shows and interesting topics you'd like, or comments, thoughts, suggestions, please feel free to email us, scott@ardencenter.com. You could check out the archives, which are on KRUUFM.com, and you could check out the archives for older shows, or you could see them as videos, which are kind of interesting, on the Arden Counseling Center YouTube channel or the Arden Counseling Center website. So www.ardencenter.com or on YouTube, Arden Center, Arden Counseling Center. So, sounds confusing, but it's not. Anyways, looking forward to talking today. Today, Danielle is here with us, and she's going to tell us a little information.
Yeah, so I'm not promoting here today, but if you guys are interested, it's relevant to the Mental Health Matters. Author Kate Grace will be speaking and doing a book signing for her work, Collateral Damage, The Impacts of My Mother's Mental Illness on Me. And that'll be Friday, October 21st, 2016 at 7 p.m. at the Fairfield Public Library Meeting Room. And you can contact if you have any questions about that at hopeforlifeevents@gmail.com.
Can you give that email again?
Yeah, that's hopeforlifeevents@gmail.com.
And, you know, if you're out of town or listening to this in Norway or wherever you're at, we're going to try and videotape that and put that on the Arden Counseling Center's YouTube channel, so you could watch videos up there of these a bunch of these lectures. We've had a bunch on suicide prevention, depression, anxiety, etc. And if there's something else you'd like up there, please let us know. And Danielle, who do we got with us today? It's our great Tom Allen, a Fairfield resident who now lives in Flint, Michigan. Yes, that Flint, Michigan, with the water crisis. And he's going to talk... What?
The same one.
The same one. Yeah. Tom, I hope you didn't, you're not the one who caused the crisis there.
Don't tell anybody, please.
All right. So, Tom.
No, I'm not. Actually, I moved here somewhat time before that broke. It's been very interesting to witness all that.
Really? Tell us about it for a second and then introduce what the topic is today.
Well, I moved to Flint in fall of 2014. I heard about the city's new master plan with green innovation zones to rethink the city of Flint, after most of General Motors, which had the largest connected factory complex in the world here at one time, they mostly moved out. So there was a big vacuum left, a lot of decay and houses being burned, and the crime rate went up, and everybody heard about that stuff. But the rebuilding has been very, very interesting, and I moved to Flint with that in mind. It's a frontier like the Old West was, or like space has been. The idea of rethinking and rebuilding Rust Belt cities. So I am really enjoying it here. I'm finding very interesting, very community-minded people, enormous creativity, enormous strides in sustainability and rethinking the neighborhoods and all this. And what was the question?
Well, you know, what... I mean, regarding mental health issues, going through this crisis... and having every politician under the sun come there and say, we're going to fix this, and yet all they've sort of seemed to do is give you some water filters and a couple gallons of water without really fixing the problem or addressing the underlying causation of the issues, not just from the water, but from rebuilding infrastructure and making the town viable. So what do you see as regarding mental health issues in this town?
Well, there are a couple real main answers to that. One is that there has been a mistrust of city government, state government, even foundations to some extent, and it's turned out that the only institutions that people really trusted have been the churches, and the churches have become focal points for the rebuilding. So there's that issue of not trusting government. there was really substantially very serious mistakes made, and then a cover-up by the governor's office and the state agencies, Department of Environmental Quality, who were really denying the facts. And so one of the, you can call it a mental health issue, is mistrust of government, mistrust of authority. It can be like a child in a family realizing that they cannot trust the parent, or someone in a school realizing that they cannot trust the administration, anything like this. When one begins to mistrust somebody that one really wanted to trust, there is a kind of an upheaval within the individual and the community. That is certainly one aspect of it.
So certainly that's a large mental health issue regarding trust. And that kind of, and we're going to have another show directly on this topic, hopefully soon, with some more residents from Flint. But
I can do that, yeah.
But the issue of trust, I think that's a great entranceway into our topic today, of how do you talk about dealing with mental illness in a family? And if, in this case, you're going to talk about the mental illness of your mother, and, you know, it certainly has affected you, and then how do you trust somebody else, being the son of somebody who's gone through this, let alone how does she learn to trust herself?
Yeah, that, I mean, there's so many things in every word or two that we could talk about. One of the big things for my mother, now, I was born in 1947 in Wisconsin, in the Madison area. My father was a professor and eventually chairman of the botany department at the University of Wisconsin, Harvard educated. And my mother had had a very unique upbringing with a very odd father who was at the same time very creative and had immense redeeming qualities, but he took them out into the wilderness all around the world, to Lapland, riding behind reindeer down the Colorado River before there were any dams there. And my mother documented this Colorado River trip as the person who kept the journal. And as the person who kept the journal, she wrote it out, and then it was eventually given to G.P. Putnam's Sons, who had a series on outdoor and wilderness adventures by young people, first of all, mostly boys, and then there were some girls who came to do the stories, and my mother was one of them. When she saw the book, after it came back in print, she saw that some things that she had never said were showing up there, and some things that were said differently than what she expected showed up. And this was deeply traumatic. It was very upsetting. It was the trust issue that we're talking about. And she lived with that, as well as other anomalies. Most of us have little anomalies running around inside us that we don't quite know what to do with.
Right, and it always becomes interesting. How do we interpret those anomalies? How do you, for somebody else, you know, a book, you know, you send to an editor and they're going to change it around, and you kind of like, oh, yeah, it's not great, but you kind of live with it. You know, that's the price you pay for doing it. Somebody else, they go, oh my God, you've betrayed my trust in you. And I think it's a fascinating issue just to talk about the concept of trust.
Yeah.
I mean, what does it actually mean to us, let alone how does she, you're going to get into her mental illness, again, how does she trust herself when she's going through that experience that she went through?
So, yeah, and one of the things I want to get to is
Yeah, please.
She had this crisis, and she went seriously into therapy. She did a beautiful job, and remembered she had loved photography, and one day she was looking at something emerge from the chemical tray in the dark room. It was all pre-digital, darkroom stuff. She saw this image came out, and she said, that is me. That is my life. That began to build a feedback relationship with herself that she had not had before. Now, in a way, one can very easily say that the absence of that was not really an awful thing on somebody else's part. She grew into that feedback relationship with herself by discovering that she loved art and photography and it became an entire life, and the whole second half of her life was full of fruit coming out of her discovering that she had loved art, and all that came through in her crisis. So she had a feedback relationship with herself. She had a way of having trust with herself that she had never had before.
Wow, Tom, that's really beautiful. I see that as using a crisis to move forward, and not only that, but using and seeing art as a way to return back to yourself and move through those things. That's very beautiful.
Yeah. I think one of the things we really want to hit on today is that out of crisis can come opportunity. As a matter of fact, one could say that inevitably comes opportunity. Out of crisis, inevitably there's opportunity, and it's whether we can grab onto it or not. If we see the universe as a closed system in any way, something that is an integrated place, it's just our job in life to discover it from a limited to a less limited place all the time. And eventually we could say, we could call it enlightenment when nothing shows us anymore. But in the process, finding the opportunity in a crisis is a beautiful thing, and it was once really striking to me when I discovered that Chinese character for crisis and the Chinese character for opportunity are very similar.
Mm.
There's always a door opening when one slams shut, crashes down around it.
I think that's a beautiful way, as Daniel said, to describe that. And I love, you know, I talk often about everything is application, that exercise can be good or bad depending on how you use it. Meditation is good or bad. Obviously, we think meditation and exercise and eating healthy, nutrition and sleep are essential and they're good tools, but it's how you apply them appropriately that makes them useful or not. Having crisis or trauma, or for a lot of people, PTSD that develops, or acute stress, or however you describe it, the question then becomes, are you going to get lost in that? How do we interpret that anomaly, that signal in our brain? And do we get lost in that crisis, or do you take that as an opportunity for transformation? And it's the same way you talk about utilizing the tool of creativity to manifest that sense of change, which she sounds like she did.
Yeah, and I would love for people to come away from hearing this show today with an increased and enhanced excitement about the idea that my crisis can have a good outcome. My crisis can open a window to something I haven't thought of. It's not always easy. You don't get that in life. You don't get that. I love the Rolling Stones song, "You can't always get what you want, but you might just find if you try some time to get what you need." You know?
And you could actually sing that, unlike me, who actually has a voice.
Yeah. I mean, this is a sidelight, but it's really interesting to me how popular music can sometimes give voice to things that we're thinking about, often in the darker parts of our psyche. But that theme as art being a means for someone to get a hold of themselves, to renew their lives, or to be more grounded or more at home in the world, I think it's a big one. Actually, I want to share a little bit of something from a book Rollo May did called The Courage to Create.
Oh, good book. Very good book.
It's a little bit similar to Paul Tillich in his...
By the way, that's Rollo May, very famous psychologist or psychiatrist. I forgot.
I think psychologist. I'm
psychologist,
sure.
Yeah.
But he quoted Degas. This is really interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Quoted Degas, the painter, as saying, "A painter paints a picture with the same mindset or feeling, I don't know quite what word he used, in the same spirit that a criminal creates a crime." Something about going into unknown territory and crossing old boundaries within ourselves. No trespassing signs. My mother talks about in her life going beyond some of the no trespassing signs that she had encountered as a kid.
Like what?
Well, let's see. Now you put me on the spot. Can I really? I've got some wonderful quotes from, in here that I.
Yeah, that'd be.
I don't want to imply, just for the kind of disclaimer, that going through a crisis and having an idea, oh, I can commit a crime because it's all right, because that's the way Degas does his paintings. It's like we're saying. The idea that going into new territory often means going past places where we had not dared go in our life before. And a therapist, Scott, I'm sure you know, can help somebody to go through one of those doorways in a safe way.
And
do something constructive with that energy, maybe it's deeper, darker energy, when they get there. Don't you think that's largely true?
Absolutely. And it really is about it, thinking of it as an energy. And then what am I doing with that energy? It's the same way I'm talking about application. This terrible thing, my partner did this thing. Okay, they didn't do it to you. They did it to themselves, and they're running away for whatever reason. Or you're running away from whatever crisis. Or you're using drugs, alcohol, workaholic, or who knows what you're using to run away with. And using that same energy to sit there and say, I'm seeking something. What am I going to do with that? By the way, you're listening to KRUU 100.1 on your FM dial, Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry. Today we're having a wonderful talk with Tom Allen, and he's talking about, how do you want to title this today, Tom?
Growing up in a family that dealt with crisis.
Absolutely. But also prospering from crisis. You know, just like...
I'm as broke as I can be, but in a bigger sense, prospering, yes. And that's the real wealth of life, making something good out of materials that look pretty bad.
Yeah, making lemonade from lemons, I suppose. But it really is, you know, and I think as a therapist, that it really is about channeling what's going on. A lot of therapy has really become like the medical-based model. It's become very exclusionary. And I'm just going to do this technique or that technique, this tool or that tool. And so people become enamored. Oh, I want CBT or DBT or ACT, all derivatives of the same thing. Or I want this kind of work or that kind of work. But it's really a much bigger thing. You're not there to solve a problem. The therapist is really there to help in that notion of transformation of your whole self. So you never not only come up to that problem again, but really allow yourself to become more full, more complete. And so I often get clients, it's like, well, I don't have a problem, so I don't need to be in therapy. Well, that might be true, but it's also, it's really about being on a journey and utilizing an energy. In this case, we're talking about dark energy in a productive way, as opposed to just stuffing it away or taking a pill and drowning it away, doing something with that.
Yeah, I don't have to be in therapy because I don't have a problem. But there can be just wonderful truth. Yippee, I've got four tires and not one of them is flat. That can be just a perfectly valid statement of a reality. I've got a roof that doesn't leak, you know. I'm in good standing in school, whatever it is. There's another aspect of it, though, that I really would like to touch on, and that is if it's I have a lot at stake in not having a problem or have anybody think I have a problem because my status will go down, I'll be thought to be weird, or I'll get humiliated on social media or something like that. You know, Scott, I really don't care if people humiliate me from now till the cows come home on social media, because I would love to take that on. I have a mental health history, not just my mother. I was in the psych ward three times, starting in 1968, in the middle of the 68 Democratic Convention, and I was in Chicago. All that was very tense, and I was doing drugs and making stupid decisions of other kinds, but out of my crisis, I'm very happy to share the fruits of it, that one can deepen from a crisis. And I got involved in a self-help mental health group called Recovery Incorporated. It's Recovery International now. I was in it for 28 years, and I was a leader for 12. And one of the things we encountered over and over again with people getting started is the stigma. The stigma against admitting I have a problem. And I'm so far beyond that that I really don't care now. And my mother also certainly went beyond that. All of her friends knew that she'd been through this crisis. And out of that experience and that deepening of herself came a compassion that was so great that people could see it without any effort. And she taught photography as she came out of this crisis. She went back to the University of Wisconsin and got a degree in art, and she taught photography at the University of Wisconsin and then founded a school called Camera Works out of her home. And other, I'm not sure if they met other places, but the best photographers in Wisconsin taught in this school.
I've surprisingly
actually finish a little thought here. Sometimes, yeah. She said after class, someone would come up to her and say, "Can I talk to you?" She was so intrinsically trustworthy that people did not have to hear her say anything other than the way she delivered herself and expressed herself, that people trusted her implicitly, and sometimes people would tell her the most amazing stories, some of them horrendous, about their lives. But she was so deeply trustworthy because she had gone within and faced those demons, and she was very happy to share that experience with others. So I'm not, this is election season, I'm not voting for stigma. I think getting beyond the stigma and having a climate in which it's okay to be vulnerable, it's okay not to know, it's okay to ask for help, it's okay to find a weakness within oneself, have a look at it, and find what makes one stronger, I think that's all the point.
Yeah, it's an amazing side effect of going down into the trenches that there's immense acceptance once you just face those parts of yourself. And I'm reminded of Joseph Campbell's
A Thousand Faces.
Yes, Hero of a Thousand Faces, and the hero's journey. And, you know, taking that time to courageously go into your own personal underworld and come out, you know, with new gifts and skills and being able to offer them to the world.
I think there's real power there. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also interesting what we touched on at the beginning of this talk regarding trust. The reason people could trust her is that she learned how to trust herself again after whatever crisis she went through.
Trust herself, and probably trust herself more deeply than the so-called normal person, the banker, mm-hmm. the anybody, the policeman, the respectable person who has never dealt with their demons or their anomalies or their personal underworld, as you said, Danielle.
And it really is an interesting way to think about it, because it really is about learning to develop that sense of trust within myself so that other people can't violate that trust. People, when I see relationships, everyone always feels violated by their partner. But learning to take back your power into you now, and that you can trust yourself, gives you the power over what's going on. So, Tom, we're going to end here in a couple of seconds, and then we're going to do a second show, a part two of this show today. But I wanted to give you and Danielle a chance to finish up regarding the topics we were talking about today. And Danielle, can you tell people again about this meeting if they want to go?
Yeah, so this upcoming October 21st on Friday night at 7 p.m., author Kate Grace will be speaking and doing a book signing for her work, Collateral Damage, The Impacts of My Mother's Mental Illness on Me. And if that's going to be at the Fairfield Public Library in the meeting room, again at 7 p.m. on October 21st. And if you're interested in contacting us about that, you can reach the event at hopeforlifeevents@gmail.com.
And if you need anything from us or like some of the old shows, don't hesitate to reach out to us, scott@ardentcenter.com, or you can go to the Ardent Center website. www.ardentcenter.com is one place where you can get that, or KRUUFM.com. Anyways, and now we're going to play one of Tom's song. But Tom, why don't you finish up for a second? What else do you want to say to finish this show?
Well, that's beautiful what you just mentioned about growing up in a family where there was a crisis in her mother's part. And my brother, sister, and I grew up with that too. And we're all quite grateful that she dealt with it. And we learn to deal with it and be richer for it. Song I'd like to play for you right now is a very playful song that I wrote in a very, very scary time of my life. But it ends up being kind of, sounds happy and joyful, but it's got this, it's called Little Train. It's about a little tiny train, the subway in Chicago, actually, when there are only two cars in the train. And this poor little train, actually, metaphorically speaking, the way I was feeling at that time. And the last verse is, little tiny train, did they take you from your mother? You were six cards yesterday, and you're only two today. You better eat your spinach, because if you don't, you're finished, little train. And the idea of eating your spinach, that's what Popeye did, you know, when he was, I don't know if anybody remembers the cartoon Popeye. He was totally getting beaten up, and he'd eat his spinach, and he'd beat up his huge enemy, Bluto. But some form of eating our spinach, some form of coming from behind, some form of prevailing against all odds, and mostly in mental health recovery, it's not beating somebody up. It's dealing with the monsters within ourselves.
Absolutely.
Little train.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tom. Bye.
We'll talk later.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.